Well, it's inspired me to live with my eyes on a different lens. You know, I used to look at life through a very fearful lens.
Hi, I'm Tony Hernandez, CEO and founder of Leading Ladies 904. I'm a runner and yogi, culture engineer, and leadership trainer. I am madly and wildly in love with people who disrupt the status quo, people who are comfortable with being uncomfortable and uncomfortable with mediocrity. And because these are my favorite kind of people who light my soul on fire, I want to bring their stories to you. You have tuned into What's Your Extraordinary with Tony Hernandez, a part of the Essential Culture Podcast Network. My goal is to take us on an inspiring journey into the minds of remarkable people. We explore the extra gene, or what I like to call the E-code. Why do some people have both the ability and drive to pursue and or create what others deem impossible? So whether you're on a run, listening in, or on your daily commute, or maybe just disconnecting from all the noise, I hope that this 30-minute dose of inspiration influences you to ask yourself, what's my extraordinary? All right, my extraordinary seekers, this next show is called Not All Heroes Wear Running Shoes. And in studio, we have the amazing Donna Diggin. She's my badass friend. She's a mother of two gorgeous humans, three-time cancer survivor, former TV anchor in Jacksonville. She's an American author. She's founder of the nation's first breast cancer marathon and founder of the Donna Foundation. Donna, thank you so much for coming here and chatting it up with me, girl.
How fun is this?
Okay, before we get started, because I'm telling you, like, my brain was everywhere. I'm just so pumped. I want to dedicate this podcast to two really special women. Annette, who lives in Deltona, and my girlfriend's mom, Bonnie. These are two mothers. They're the mothers of my girlfriends. My girlfriend, Tanya in Harlem, and my girlfriend here, Layla, in Jacksonville. Both of their moms were just diagnosed with breast cancer. Miss Bonnie was diagnosed, I think, this week. And then Miss Annette was diagnosed about a month ago. So I want to just, just dedicate this podcast.
Send some love. Yeah, we're sending some love out into the universe for those ladies, for sure.
Send some love. And I thought there's no better place to do that than here and spending this time with you. Okay. Girl. I just want to say that I have a couple of things in common with you. All right. We're going to talk about a lot of things. And I just want, I have to say, I love that we have this in common. We drop F-bombs. So, you know, I'm just letting you know. And it's not like we're cursing at anybody. It's just a superlative.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you know, it drives a point.
Some things need it. They just need it.
Girl, right. So if we do, I'm just letting you know, please don't edit that out. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's get started. I've always wanted to ask you this. What is it like to be diagnosed with cancer? Not one, not two, but to hear a doctor say those words that are just devastating three times.
Well, it's different every time, right? I think the first time, you know, in my whole badass attitude, right? My whole type A, I'm running through this, I'm going to be done attitude. It was, okay. You know, I'll put this as an appointment on my calendar. I'll show up. I'll get it done. I'll be finished. It was one of those, you know, it was a small cancer. Didn't seem like a big, huge thing. And I really thought I would just take care of it and be done. Second time got my attention. Mm-hmm. And the second time in communicating with a lot of other women, because that's when I started my blog, to communicate with other women when I was on the air. I didn't want to talk about it on TV. So I started this blog and I started just having all these amazing conversations with women who were going through the same thing I was, except they couldn't pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get their treatment. They had to decide, am I going to put food on the table for my kids? Am I going to get treatment? So that second time is really what brought me to the Donna Foundation.
Give us a timeline. The first time was, I believe, was a 2000.
First time was 1999.
1999, yes.
Second time was 2002. And 2002 is, we started the Donna Foundation in 2003.
Amazing.
Third time was a few months before we had our inaugural 26.2 with Donna.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So it was nuts. So the difference between the first time and the third time was a universe, because the first time I had a small treatable cancer, the third time I was getting news that the cancer had spread to my left lung.
Oh, heartbreaking.
So I think that each time, you know, the universe was just trying to steer me in different directions. And I think, you know, the thing about that third time was that's really what caused me to completely change everything about my life. When I say everything, I mean, I was a type A crazy person. No, I was. I mean, and I'm sure I still have some of those aspects. But what I'm saying is, I never took time to be happy. I never took time to feel grateful. I was always the next rung on the ladder. And I think after that third diagnosis, I was like, okay, you know what? I might not be here very long. And I'm not going to spend whatever time I have left on this planet fearful. Right. And that's what caused me to try to recalibrate my brain. And that's been, you know, really, frankly, everything, Tony. I mean, to come from that first diagnosis to the third, you know, I frankly wouldn't trade any of them, because we wouldn't have any of the things that we have. But I'm, you know, I say this with the knowledge that so many people have not survived this disease. So don't think I'm being flip when I say this. But for my personal life, if I were to leave this planet tomorrow, I would be so grateful that I had the opportunity to learn in the way that I learned.
Well, you know, Don, I said, look, I have not shed a tear on any of the podcast. And I don't think, I just said, you know what, if there is one, it's going to be this one. My mother did not. She did not survive. She did not. She lived two years, right? And I would say that this, I mean, it's why I absolutely adore you. Like, I always say that I'm madly in love with certain people. Like, I'm madly in love with you because.
Well, the feeling is mutual.
Just because of, like, your tenacity, your outlook. And you know what? Speaking of mothers, I mentioned two gorgeous human beings that you have. Like, the two of your, they're absolutely beautiful. How old were they when you were first diagnosed?
Oh, gosh. Tiny. They were 5 and 3.
So Aunt Drew is a younger one, right, Drew? So, and then Danielle was 5. Okay. And that must have been really scary. Well, the second time you said, okay, it was just like, all right, this is serious.
Well, I think the biggest thing with me and them was at various stages, it was a completely different approach with them, right? Because when they were little, the doctor said, just tell them you're going to be okay. You know, because we thought I was, right? Mm-hmm. But also just don't burden them with anything they don't want to know. Let them ask questions. And if they want to ask questions. So in my mind, I was always sort of going down the road on that a little bit. But with the kids, they were fine. It wasn't until that third diagnosis where I think they both were shook a little bit.
Well, they were older.
So they could get it. And right. They had friends who had lost parents or family members to breast cancer. And I think they were really scared that third time. And I had to be very honest with them that third time. Look, I'm going to do everything I can to be here. Mm-hmm. And I believe I'll be here, but I don't know. And so we're just going to love our life, you know, and that's really all any of us can do.
You know, I think you've already touched on this, but I think that I just want to give you the opportunity to, if there is something else, how has cancer inspired you to live differently?
Well, it's inspired me to live with my eyes on a different lens. You know, I used to look at life through a very fearful lens. And what I always say, and I know people will disagree with me on this, and I have girlfriends who have gone through this, and they disagree with me vehemently, and that's their right. But I would love to take the word fight out of cancer, because if you are fighting, you are fearful. Mm-hmm. If you are fighting, it's because you fear what is on the other end of
right,
that.
Nobody's fighting with fun, like right. Laughter and joy.
So my thing is, why are you exhausting yourself in a fight with your own body? Instead, let's look at this through a different lens. And so that's when I started to change my mind through you know, reading and meditation and different things that I did to flip the way I viewed what I was going through. And that was, nobody is guaranteed more than today. So let me look at today and get up and say, yes, I am here. And what am I going to do with this day? Mm-hmm. And so I literally, you know, I get up and I make this gratitude list, and I'm super excited to be alive.
And you take photos of the sunrise.
Right, every day, right?
Every
yeah,
day.
I know you're so tired
and
of my
I love it.
Every day I'm posing, hey, Kay, wow, look at it today. But that's how
I feel. But it's so magical. It really is.
But that's how I feel. And so I honestly think that's where it's at for me. I had to completely change my outlook. And if we could just say to people, look, a love revolution makes a whole lot more sense. Love your body, envision yourself in perfect health. I'm not saying that means you're going to live forever. I'm saying that however long you're here, you're going to enjoy your life.
Yeah, and quality.
Plus, if you look at studies, if you are stressed out and constantly in fight or flight mode, your body is going to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
So give your body some love and put love in your heart and love in your soul and radiate that to as many people as you can. And that's going to help you. And I when I hear myself say that, I go, gosh, that just sounds like so much bullshit, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds so trite.
Well,
but
you know,
it's not.
I will tell you, Donna, though, my mom lived that way. My mom meditated. She read. She wasn't. I wouldn't characterize her as a fighter. She was an optimist. I was an optimist. I think that's why we just thought, okay, she's just going to get over this. She just didn't. I mean, the woman would meditate hours on out.
Yeah, but my guess is, Tony, that she infused some of that into you. And she's probably still with you every day for that reason.
She is.
You know, I mean, none of us is guaranteed anything beyond today. Mm-hmm. None of us is. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is we can't get our minds around that. And nor do we want to think about it every day. But if you just get up every day and you go, okay, this is my opportunity today to do something. What can I do with this day?
Yeah.
Because this is the one I have.
I love that. Okay. So you wrote two memoirs. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that. The first one, well, I think you wrote The Good Fight first.
Yeah, The Good
and
Fight.
Then,
just before my disenchantment with the word fight. The Good Fight was written after I wrote my journal, my online journal, which we now call a blog, I guess. But it was my story, and it was the stories of people that I communicated with.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a weaving into a tale of how the foundation came to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last chapter culminated in the first person that we served through the foundation, who unfortunately passed away,
What was her name?
I'm not going to remember now. It will come
Don't
to me.
Don't worry about it. When I post it, I'll send
will,
a shout
it will come to me. But she was amazing. And I remember she was so grateful for the help of the foundation, because her kids weren't going to have a Christmas, and we made sure her kids had a Christmas, and we paid for some of her bills. And I remember, and this is going to sound creepy to some people, I guess, but I felt so drawn to her. When she was dying, I literally crawled into bed with her.
Mm, that's not creepy.
And I just remember putting my hand on her face and just wishing that I could somehow make it not so.
Mm.
You know, she had these little kids, but you know, I promised her we would do everything we could do, and we ended up paying for her funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And her family was so grateful because they weren't left with this big mountain of debt, but she was, she left a very peaceful person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful that we were able to do that. So that was really how the foundation began, was with women who were reaching out to me because they saw me on the air and they knew I was going through the same thing they were going through, only they had different circumstances than me and they wanted me to know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we started.
So that the people can understand, did the foundation come before the marathon, or did the marathon
yes.
come before?
What happened was, because I was hearing from all these women, I said, you know, I'm going to use this megaphone attached to my mouth,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to create an entity with a whole bunch of help, obviously, that can help women who are underserved, who have to make difficult choices about whether they even get treatment or whether they keep the lights mm-hmm. on or their mortgage paid. And we're going to help those women while they're going through treatment so they can focus on the peace of mind of getting better without worrying about, am I shoving bills in the drawer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole idea. And that's how we started. So we started by, I was always a runner. They always say, marry your passions, right? Obviously I had a passion for this because I'd been through it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a passion for running. You know, I just love running. And so I said, I'm going to have people just come run races with me and we'll raise money. We would sell t-shirts and whatever, and we'd raise a few thousand dollars here and there. And so the marathon was actually born out of some research I did and a suggestion from Jeff Galloway, who's an Olympic mm-hmm. marathoner, who said, hey, why don't we train some people to run a marathon? And at the end of the day, I said, why don't we start our own? You know, there isn't one for breast cancer. Why don't we start our own? And that's how the Donna Marathon got started.
So I remember you saying there was, I was it was either a conversation that we had or I was listening to you speak and I was there and you were talking about Dr. Edith Perez mm-hmm. and you were sitting at a Starbucks or at a coffee shop. And I think that they, you know, you guys had napkins and like you were writing these ideas on a napkin. I want you to take us to that moment when this sort of the idea was born of like.
Well, it was actually my birthday and we had met at Starbucks for my birthday. I guess it's always a cheap date, right? And basically we were grousing about the fact that we couldn't raise enough money for her for breast cancer research and me for underserved women with breast cancer. And I just started saying, you know, we've been doing this thing with Jeff and I just wonder, why can't we just start our own thing? And she says, well, yeah, why don't we start our own thing? Well, let's start our own thing. Can we do this? Yeah, we can do this. And so we called Jeff and Jeff said, sure, we can do it because, you know, Jeff's like we are and believes we can do anything, right? And we were ignorance on fire is what we were. We had no idea how to start a marathon. But it really was born out of our mutual frustration of not being able to raise enough money for mm-hmm. our projects that we wanted to do and our love for running. Because Edith, in addition to being my doctor, was also my running partner.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we had to approach Mayo and went through a 2-year process with Mayo Clinic on the whole thing. And Jeff came in and helped with the training portion. And really, I mean, honestly, Tony, I wish I could tell you we had some magical, you know, process of elimination, but it was really sort of this light bulb that went off of, hey, mm-hmm. nobody else is doing this. Why can't we? Yeah. And so,
like, it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Right.
And you're also in a position where women are reaching out to you. And so you're like, okay, wait a minute. This is all sort of coming together.
Right. Well, and then the best thing was that so many people told us we couldn't do it. And so, you know, never tell a motivated
girl,
woman she can't do something.
Girl, I'm like, this, oh, okay, watch me. There's a quote, I don't know who, it's a book I'm reading. It's called Quirky. I think it was Elon Musk. And it says, don't tell me it's impossible. Just tell me that you can't do it.
Right, there you
like,
go.
Like, you can't do it. Okay, so, I have had the great honor of running this marathon. In fact, let me just go back because I wanted to talk about, you know, you said that it was sort of you married. It was like your passion in running and then, you know, all of that came together. That's actually how I met you. I don't know if I ever told you leading up to when I sent you that. I think I sent you like a private message on Facebook. I had moved here from Philadelphia. My mom had passed away. I had done probably like my sixth or my fifth marathon. And I started doing research and I'm like, I cannot believe that I landed in the city in which there is a national breast cancer marathon. And the woman who founded it is a survivor. And I thought that was, you know, it brought hope and it made me feel like, okay, like what can I do now so that another daughter and so another woman out there can support her mom maybe differently, because I didn't know about this foundation then. So I've had the honor of running it, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful run. And I want to ask you this: what is your favorite moment as you run along the Jacksonville beaches, the 26.2 miles? You got to get. I know there's many, and
there's
I know
so
that
many.
The bridge is probably the best because I'm there usually cheer you on.
Oh,
but which
no.
one is your favorite?
Oh, it's, you know, it's got to be, I'm going to feel bad now because I'm going to eliminate neighborhoods and they're all so fabulous. But I think probably the most amazing feeling is running down Ocean Boulevard in Atlantic Beach. Because, and if you don't run the full marathon, if you just run the half, you never see it. But the entire community gets together on that road and they start build out 2 days earlier and they literally decorate from top to bottom. Every palm tree, every bush, every, you know, you can't even imagine all the stuff. And everybody has lined that street like the darn Tour de France, you know, and they're just out there
so
just
fun.
Screaming. They're, and it's at about mile 15 or 16 when you're pretty tired and sort of ready to sit in the road, you know?
Right.
And so you turn this corner and all of a sudden it's just, wow.
Yeah. I love this race so much that like I actually, now it's about like, do I want to run the marathon or do I want to cheer? Because really when I cheer, I run anywhere between 8 to 12 miles.
Right.
And I mean, it's a blast.
Yeah. It's hard not to run though. I still have to run every year just because I can't stand not to. I call it a 26.2 mile parade for me. I'm not going to break any right. land speed records, right? But it's so fun to just with every step, you know. And I mentioned Ocean Boulevard just because they're so over the top. But honestly, there are places along the whole marathon course where you see stuff that makes you just light up like a light bulb. You know, somebody will have a sign that says, you know, thank you for running for my mother, or thank you for running for my sister. And you just go, you know, it just gets you.
Listen, this is a great time. Look, Herbie in New York City, Ruthie in Philadelphia, Sam in Philadelphia. I keep telling you, this is a race you got to do. Registration opens May 21st and the marathon is February 19th.
Very good.
February 10th.
Yeah, February
2019. 10th. February 10th.
I thought, did we change the date? Always the second weekend in February. Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. I wanted to talk about the foundation a little bit, about the race, and I want to talk about sort of the Donna then, and I want to talk about the Donna now.
Okay.
Right? What are you up to now? What do you got going on? Well, I know that you've got the race. Mm-hmm. What other things do you have that we don't know about?
Well, I will say that my whole attitude about life has changed so dramatically, and I told you that. So around 2012, when I decided it was time to step out of the news business. You know, we had gone through that incredibly crazy economy. And just like every other business out there, they'd gotten rid of half the staff and given us all five more jobs. And I decided it was time to change my life. I was afraid the stress was going to make me sick again, honestly. Mm. And so I decided to start my own company and got into a company that where I would, I had a speaking element of it. I had some shows I did. I have a health and wellness element of that company. And so I got into my own thing and was able, fortunately, to leave news in about a year after I started doing that. And what's been great about that is it's allowed me to have time freedom to do what I need to do with the foundation and with the race and with other things that I'm interested in. I'm you know, as you know, I've become, you know, I think I always was very passionate about service. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, service is what does it for me, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I've taken every personality test in the world, right? With all these conferences you go to and they give you different personality
right,
tests.
Right, right.
And I always go, "Really? That sounds so boring. That's really what does it for me is service? Come on."
Service.
But that's where I feel drawn to. Mm-hmm. No matter what it is, whether it's in my business life or in my personal life or you know, whatever it is, that's what draws me. And so I feel like that's been a big change for me to step off of something that was really my goal in life, was to be a journalist. Mm-hmm. I love writing. I love journalism. But you have to recognize at a point in your life when something doesn't serve you anymore.
Right.
And you have to act on that. And that was a scary jump for me. Mm-hmm. But I've never looked back from it. And I've been very, very happy. And so I'm involved in a million projects. But I'd say the biggest shift for me was to get off of the hamster wheel of just feeling like I had to do things the same all mm-hmm. the time over and over again.
You're speaking to my heart, girl, because I think I've shifted a lot about how I'm doing things now in the last year and a half. This is about like, what's going to be my impact, which is the question that I have for
right?
you. It's like, what do you want to be remembered for? Mm.
Well, like I said, I want to change the world. I mean, that's especially with children. I mean, I'll just tell you, you know, I've recently gotten involved a little bit more in the political scene, which I always reported on.
Another thing we have in common, because you introduced me to somebody really amazing who I absolutely adore and was inspired by.
Yeah. Same. And I have always kept an arm's length from politics because of my job in journalism. And frankly, I always felt okay with that. You know, I felt pretty good about the process. I thought there were reasonable people all around and they would take care of that part of it. But what I found was the more I got involved in seeing people who were doing everything they could do every day to keep every single ball in the air, and yet they were dropping balls because it wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. They couldn't make the math work. Mm-hmm. And I see that every day, right? I see it every single, I see these amazing people that have more heart and soul and determination than a ton of people out there that make $1 billion, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And yet they can't make it all work. And I go, how is it possible that in the wealthiest country in the world, we cannot have a safety net for those people?
Right.
And I think that's what first got me connected with, we're talking about Mayor Andrew Gillum. I started to look at his platform, and he's running for governor of Florida as a Democrat. And I've never been a Democrat before.
Right.
I was an NPA, right? But I started looking at his stuff, and one of his proposals was universal health care. And I know there are going to be people that go, oh, how are you going to pay for that? Well, he has a plan for that. And so right. I started to look at all of his plans. And you know, the bottom line is I recognized in him a true heart of service.
Yeah.
And because that's what does it for me, and I have been so disenchanted with so much of that.
Right. We have that in common too.
Right. that I went, oh my gosh, I don't know why this man wants to put himself through all this craziness, but thank God he does. And if he does, then I want to do everything I can to help him. And so I'm volunteering to help with his campaign, because I think we have to take a different direction. I'm frightened if I believe in fear at all, and I try not to. If I were to say what we're doing right now, if we were to march that out another 5 or 10 years, I fear for our state. Mm-hmm. I fear for our country. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to change, you know, my mantra, love over fear, right?
Yeah.
We have got to change back to a focus of more love over fear in this country and in this state, because otherwise we are going in a very dark place.
Right. Well, Donna, so you know, Mayor Gillum, we were actually working on having him appear on the podcast.
Like, I'm so glad.
And I'm so excited, because in the hour that I met him, and just in that hour, as I shared on that day, I just felt more hope in that hour than I have felt in a while.
Well, let me say this, Tony, because since I have the opportunity, he is the only non-millionaire in this race. He comes from you know, he's one of seven kids. His parents worked a bunch of jobs so he could go to high school and college. He was the first kid in his family to do so, and he gets it. He gets the struggle, and so we need to support people like that. It's really easy to stroke yourself a check or to come from, you know, lots of money, but somebody like him, you know, I mean, gosh, wouldn't he just benefit the state so much?
Well, I'm excited, and I just cannot wait to have him here. Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
What does your soul on fire?
Well, gosh, I hate to say the same stuff, but you know, my husband certainly sets my soul on fire. But my husband and my children. But I would say again,
and your dog,
my dog. Okay. Yeah, but if I can honestly, and again, I know how this sounds, but if I can get to the end of the day, and I have talked to a person that I feel like I have somehow helped,
mm-hmm.
somehow made their day better, somehow erased some sort of fear or you know, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
that fills me up like I can't even begin to tell you.
Right.
So I would say service sets me on fire. It mm-hmm. really does. I can't believe the girl who started out as the type A can't wait to climb to the top of the ladder says that. But honestly, that's where I am. I mean, I'm really fairly introverted, to be perfectly honest with you.
I know that about you.
So sometimes it really takes a huge push for me to get myself to talk to people like I need to. But once I do, and I connect with them, and I feel like there's been that connection, and I've actually in some way maybe helped them, oh my gosh, it makes me so happy.
Mm.
And they help me. That's the thing.
Right.
We feed each other, right? That's what happens.
What's your favorite book? How has it impacted you? What do we need to read?
Okay. Let me tell you, because I can't answer this with one book. So you're going to have to just bear with me just for a second. Okay. Because I'm a writer and I absolutely adore beautiful writing. That's just a passion for me.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite fiction book is a book called The Shadow of the Wind by a gentleman by the name of Carlos Ruiz Zafón. It's about a cemetery of forgotten books. And when you go in, and somebody can go in and choose a book, but then you're responsible for that book in your entire life. And it takes you on this crazy tale. But the big deal is the writing is exquisite. And so I adore it. That's a must read for
what
anybody.
Is it?
It's called The Shadow of the Wind. It's
the
been
Shadow
out
of
for,
the Wind.
For, many,
check it
for
out.
Several years. But it's, I mean, the writing is so good, you can't put it down. It, as far as, you know, the other thing that sets my soul on fire is spiritual journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know that I love, Love is Letting Go of Fear is probably the book that has changed my life and my outlook more than anything else. Jerry Jampolsky wrote that. I would recommend that to anyone, even if you are not a reader. This is a tiny little book that if you really take into your soul, it will change your focus from fear to love. So important. And then I just finished reading a book. And the reason I thought about you when I read this book is it's written by a woman named Nadia Boltz Weber. She's a Lutheran pastor.
Okay.
And she wrote a book called Accidental Saints.
Mm.
And girlfriend, you want to know somebody who loves the F-bomb as much as we do. I mean, I am telling you,
I'm proud of us. We did not drop
in
one.
In the first line of the book, I'm like, all righty then. This girl is speaking my love language.
You're like, okay.
But the whole idea of this book is that you've we're all accidental saints. Mm-hmm. You know, we find saints in the most unlikely of places.
Yes.
And
yes.
And we're all, it's about spiritual connection and community. Yes. And I just love it so much. And those are the books that you talk about. I mean, I have books that I read, fiction books that I read for writing, and then these books I read to nourish my soul. And
it sounds like
amazing.
One that you're going to keep in your library.
Right? I have a million books overrunning everything in my household. I mean, I don't have room for them anymore. They're stuffed in every crevice under the bed, in the closets. I can't bring myself to get rid of them, but I should.
I'm reading like five at the same time.
I know, it's the best.
All right. What's your relationship with failure?
I don't like it, but
so honest.
But right, I don't like it. But I really go by the adage that either you get what you want or you get a lesson. I really think that's true. You have to fail in order to succeed. And when I say fail, I don't mean fail. I mean, I think failure is just like, okay, you're going down this road. We're going to hit a detour and we're going to get there another way. And I think I'm a very stubborn person, so it's hard for me sometimes to recognize this is not the door that's going to open. But you have to go this way in order to reach the goal.
Right.
So I think it's very instructive. But no, I don't like it at all. It's not something that I don't really believe in it. I think that failure is a word, but truly all it is a flag that says, okay, you know, go this way instead.
Yeah.
And helps to build on whatever your future success is going to be.
I say like it's a course corrector.
It's a course corrector.
Yeah,
that's
course
it.
Corrector.
No, I love it. Absolutely. I mean, you got everybody fails. You might as well get your arms around that.
Donna, I could have you here for like another hour.
I'm sorry.
We could totally just talk for another hour. Maybe we'll have you back.
Did we already go through 30 minutes? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, actually, yeah. He's
I'm
like,
sorry.
Hello, T, let's go. Listen, here's what I want to say to you. I want to very quickly, I told a girlfriend, my girlfriend in New York, that I was talking to you and that I was interviewing you. And she said, oh, the founder of the marathon. I said, she goes, I don't even know how you do that. Like, it's like finding like a grocery store. And I was like, that's so funny. Cause it's like, I said, I think it's probably easier to like start a grocery store than a marathon. But listen, on behalf of women everywhere, on behalf of their daughters and their sons and their husbands, thank you so much for taking something that is devastating and could have totally just been, you could have had a different outcome, but you took that and you did something so incredible, launching a foundation, launching a marathon. Thank you so much for being who you are, this bright light, message of love over fear. I love you so much.
Thank you. I love you.
Thank you so much for being here with me. You heard that at the beginning of this podcast, we were dedicating this show to two special mothers, Bonnie and Annette. And I also want to sort of do this in memory of my own mother, Nelida Hernandez. I love you, Mom. This is for my runners out there who sign up for marathons and just love running. If you want to sign up for something that does really something special, not just for women who are living with cancer, but also, you know, funding breast cancer research, know that this race, 100% of your registration fee goes to both of those things, research, breast cancer research at Mayo Clinic, and also supporting women living with breast cancer. Registration opens May 21st, and the race is right here in Jacksonville Beach, February 10th, 2019. Donna also talks to us about her mantra, love over fear, and she's changing the paradigm. She's asking us to shift our perspective and perhaps look at it as another really beautiful day to live and make a difference. I'm also learning that there are so many women in this community who you can tell them. There's a quote that says, don't tell me it's impossible. Tell me that you can't do it. And Donna Deegan is one of them. She took a diagnosis and not only founded a foundation to support women who are experiencing the same challenges, but also founded a marathon.
I'm curious to know, what's your extraordinary? Let me know on Instagram. You can follow me at Tony Hernandez Brown, or Facebook, Tony Hernandez, or Twitter, Phila Tony. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and comment. Your rates and reviews help other people find our show. Additionally, check out the Essential Culture Podcast Network on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts for other great shows.
A special thank you to my girl Jessie Kyle, Sean Kyle, and Louis Rieger for the fat intro track. What's Your Extraordinary is produced by Tim Driscoll and is part of the Essential Culture Podcast Network.